I'm running for governor because I believe we need to have a more fair, just society. One that focuses on social justice. One where we fund public education and public schools equitably. One that invests in universal child care for working families. One that creates a new deal for public spending on infrastructure and capital improvements, similar to the types of projects we funded after the Great Depression with the New Deal. And then with and also focusing on criminal justice reform. I'm tired of fighting over scraps. We shouldn't be in a place where one community is fighting another. Downstate communities are fighting Chicago. One university is pit against the next. Social service providers are on the verge of closure. All over what? Busting unions and reducing wages and benefits. Never in history has cutting working people's salaries helped working people. And so I'm running for governor because it's time to bring people together and unite them rather than divide them based on race and class and geography.
And I want to get into some of your specific proposals that you kind of alluded to just there in just a moment. But first of all, you live in and represent Chicago's 47th Ward on the north side, but mm-hmm. you grew up in Des Plaines. Tell us a little bit more about yourself.
So my parents are immigrants to the United States. I'm a first-generation American. My parents, especially my dad, came to the United States as a result of a lot of the New Deal era programs and the Great Society. This idea that, if you work hard, you have a shot at the middle class, into the middle class, and to get ahead. And that has certainly been true for my family, but it hasn't been easy. Part of the reason I jumped into the race is, my dad's an engineer, so he worked on the factory floor. So while he was, a lot of times part of management, when jobs were offshored or automated or moved to a different state, it was often, he was laid off just along with everybody else. And one thing that was common throughout my childhood was, sometimes he had one, two, or three really good years while he was working. And other times it took a year or more sometimes to find a job. And we've experienced what most people around this country have experienced. Wages have gone down. It's harder and harder to get ahead. I've had to take out hundreds of thousands of dollars in student loans. While I had opportunity because my parents came here, it wasn't without sacrifice. And we just got to make sure that it's possible for the average person to have a chance at the American dream. And the way to do that is to start addressing issues like income inequality. We have to stop fighting each other over scraps.
So let's talk about this New Deal for Illinois. Everyone should be at least familiar with Franklin Delano Roosevelt's mm-hmm. New Deal for the United States that was born out of the Great Depression in the 1930s. So how is your New Deal similar and different from that?
It's similar in the sense that I've always believed that government is aspirational, that when people and government come together, great things happen. We created the largest middle class in this country after the Great Depression because we invested in working people and putting them back to work, restoring dignity to work, and paying a real living wage. We built things like the national parks, the post offices. WPA artists painted murals and created posters. The point was that infrastructure in this country was invested in, and that infrastructure also included things like the arts. And because all of these things together, whether it's public schools, libraries, universities, community art centers that were built during the 30s and 40s. These are all institutions that make communities great and help people get ahead and gave them a shot at the American dream. This is the same approach that's we need in Illinois. We can pass a major capital bill and put people back to work. We have another wave of automation coming in trucking and supply chain. We can't get caught flat-footed when trucking is the easiest way for a middle-aged male without a college degree to get a shot at a working class, at a middle-class wage. Once these jobs are gone, if we think we're nervous about what we see nationally in the rhetoric, it's going to get worse. We need to start investing in people today. And that's what my New Deal does.
You said we can pass a capital bill in Illinois, but can you pass a bill that encompasses the ambitious goal of something like a New Deal?
Yes, absolutely we can. It's important to remember.
There's the political will in the Illinois General Assembly to get that done.
I think there's the political will amongst the people. As I go around the state and I talk to people, one thing I hear over and over again, when I talk about my campaign's four key planks, first one being education equity with changing the school funding formula. Every community feels the inequity, unless you live in an enclave outside of the city of Chicago. Every family, working family, experiences inequity and the difficulties of trying to find quality childcare and paying for it. I propose universal childcare for families making $75,000 or less. And this jobs and capital bill, some people call it spending. I call it investment, because when you invest in capital construction jobs, there's a multiplier effect. And then let me also say this. We have the fifth largest economy in the country. We spend absolutely dead last on public education. We don't invest enough in early childhood, and we certainly don't spend enough on capital and infrastructure. Our economy currently is bigger than most countries around the world. So the idea that the money isn't there is just false. It's that we don't have the political will to tax fairly and make sure that we're investing in all communities, not just the very wealthy ones.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Willis Kern with Chicago Alderman Ameya Pawar, who is one of the two announced candidates for the Democratic nomination for governor in 2018. Part of your plan is for the state to stop relying on property taxes to pay for education, mm-hmm. and also your universal daycare plan. But let's take a look at education reform. This has been debated for decades in mm-hmm. the state of Illinois. In the 1990s, the late Don Clark Netsch, who was Democratic candidate for governor, was politically lynched by Republicans for proposing what they termed an 85% hike in taxes to pay for reforming education. So how is your plan different from hers or all these other plans to reform education that have stalled through the decades?
I think, you know, it's important. It's, look, political sound bites, commercials, the mailers, it's all just cheap tactics. At the end of the day, as a society, if we're concerned about lifting all boats and making sure that whether you live in Cairo or Rockford or Chicago, that everyone has a fair shot at the middle class, the way to do that is to invest in public education, to make sure from K through 12, vocational, trade school, or universities or beyond, that there is a pipeline that's available to all kids. And the way to do that is to spend more on districts that don't have wealthy tax bases, property tax bases. That's pretty much every community outside of a few enclaves. So that's not a Democratic or Republican issue. I mean, most, if you look at the county maps, a lot of them are red. But all of those counties and communities still feel the inequities. So I don't know. I don't look at this as a Democratic or Republican issue. I look at this as a human capital and an equity issue. And yeah, it's easy to chalk this up with some cheap soundbite. But I'm going around the state and talking to people, looking them in the eye and presenting my case. And that's what I'm going to do. So one of the things I see happening with young people today is they go to college, they do all the right things, they go to graduate school, and they graduate with an enormous amount of debt. Now, nationwide, there's about $1 trillion weighing down consumer spending and savings and buying a home and creating wealth. And what's happening for young people is it's getting harder for them to move out of their parents' house, buy a place. In some cases, if they have a partner, settle down and have a child. And that's a problem, because what ends up happening is we end up in a place like Japan or Ireland, where you have lots of educated people working lots of hours and not having children because it costs too much. So what I'm proposing is using the bonding authority of the Illinois Student Assistance Commission to refinance student loans at a cheaper rate than the feds can give you in exchange for 10 years of residency in the state of Illinois. So if I get you at 23 or 24 and I get you to stay for 10 years, we'll promise to put hundreds of more dollars into your pockets every month and thousands of dollars every year and settle down here in Illinois. That's how we grow the population. It's certainty and making it possible for people to get ahead.
Are there other plans elsewhere in other states?
North Dakota.
North Dakota has something similar like that than this. It sounds great from a conceptual standpoint to sell this to human beings who have lives. They have to get up every day and go to work and send their kids to school. But obviously, as you well know, in this political system, people want to know how much is it going to cost and how am I going to pay for it? So what are your specifics on this new deal for Illinois?
Well, revenue has to be on the table, right? Here's one thing I want to make sure people understand when we talk about working families. And this is why the failure for all of us to have a more thorough conversation is why it's hard to address income inequality. It's because we keep fighting over scraps. People making $150,000 fight people making $100,000 versus 80, 80 versus 60. Because it's easy to pick on someone that's making just slightly less than you, and it's always easy to be envious of someone making slightly more than you. What I tell people is If you go to work every day, whether you're a doctor, a lawyer, a carpenter, or you work in a fast food restaurant, if a majority of your income comes from going to work, you're a working family or a working person. Now, that's not to say someone at the very higher ends, like a doctor, might not need to pay incrementally more. But for the most part, we're all in the same boat. But if a majority of your income comes from your money making you money, God bless you. That's great. But the tax code is such that you pay a tiny fraction of that money that you make, that your money makes you, than someone who went to medical school, than someone who went to law school, than someone who went to trade school, or someone who's simply trying to get ahead, maybe get their GED and figure out how to get into community college. That's not fair. All these resources that are in this country are accumulating with just a tiny few families, like Bruce Rauner's. And then yet they tell us that the best way to help working people is that if you help them get richer so they can sprinkle a few scraps on us. I don't buy that. I reject that. So my point to people is, when we talk about how much these things cost, it's important for all of us to recognize that we're, for the most part, in the same boat, and that we're all having the same struggles when it comes to making ends meet, putting our kids through childcare. Some have it better than others. But from an equity standpoint, we're in the same boat.
You propose reforming the criminal justice system. You mentioned that. Coming up after our interview is one with a member of the bipartisan panel that Governor Rauner convened to accomplish just that. How do your reforms differ from the ones that were developed by this study group?
Well, I mean, I think, look, here's one thing I have to compliment Governor Rauner on, is that I think he's been on the leading edge of criminal justice reform. I have to compliment him for that. Where he's wrong is he's defunded social services and mental health services and has not prioritized any capital spending in poor communities. So if you want to get to criminal justice reform, we need to fund social and mental health services in communities. We need to fund and pay for adult diversion programs so that if you get caught with a little bit of with some drugs, that you're not tagged with the scarlet letter for the rest of your life. That if you have a mental health issue, you can get treatment rather than going to prison. So we need to pay for these services. But more importantly, or just as importantly, we need to start addressing issues like poverty. We need to start addressing the same issues that impact urban areas and small-town America, whether it's opiates or heroin addiction. A lack of opportunity, disinvestment by government, is leading people to start doing things that they normally wouldn't do. And the way to address that is by creating certainty in state government, funding services, funding schools, and more importantly, investing in poor communities. Not trying to gut their wages or benefits, as the governor proposed, but actually invest in people.
The state has set a goal of reducing its prison population by 25% by the year 2025. Is this doable, or is it ambitious enough? What are your thoughts on that goal?
Absolutely, it's doable, and we can do more. It's recognizing that, you know, people don't wake up in desperate situations overnight and then all of a sudden decide, you know what, I don't have access to the formal economy, so I'm going to get up and start selling drugs. That's not a decision that people take lightly. People do that because they have to absolutely have to do that to support their families or themselves. So the way to address, you know, some of these low-level crimes is to provide opportunity. With mental health issues, we have to recognize that providing services in communities is important, and that when you don't provide proper services in communities, we end up arresting people because they commit crimes or simply because they're mentally ill, and then we jail them for $50,000, $60,000 a year. There's a big delta between what it costs to house someone in the state prison system versus what it actually costs to provide treatment or services. It's a fraction of what it costs to house an inmate. So why don't we just recognize those savings and start figuring out ways to invest in communities and in people? Again, the longer we fight over scraps, the harder it is to actually address these structural social justice issues. But the second we start coming together and recognizing that we're all in the same boat, it's easier for us to unite and start addressing these systemic issues in a more comprehensive way.
We've been talking primarily about governmental issues during our conversation here. I'm going to kind of shift a little bit to politics. Mm-hmm. What percentage of your campaign time do you intend to spend downstate? And by downstate, I mean south of I-80.
My plan is to go to every county in the state. And here's why. When I first won in 2011 in Chicago as an alderman, I beat the Chicago machine. I didn't have any money. No one endorsed me. No one was willing to help me. The establishment certainly didn't want to come by my side, and they certainly didn't for my reelection. The thing I learned was I knocked on every door, So it didn't matter if they were Democrats, Republicans, registered voters or not. The point was to go talk to people, look them in the eye, and make my case. Not everyone voted for me. You get door slammed in your face. But you learn a lot about people by talking to them and leveling with them. It's the same approach here. Obviously, I can't go to every door in the state. But what I can do is not write people off because they live in a red or blue county, but instead go talk to people. Because I don't think people wake up every day and look in the mirror and say, I'm a Democrat or Republican. People like me force them to choose around election time. But all people generally care about is they want to be able to provide for themselves, for their families. They want to go to solid schools. They want certainty. And if you go talk to people, whether they live in red or blue counties, I think we have what it takes to peel off enough votes from around the state to win the nomination win the race overall. So I'm going to go talk to people.
You have a name that outside of a part of Chicago is not really familiar to a lot of people. Mm-hmm. It's difficult for many people to pronounce. And you're relatively new on the political scene here in Illinois. You've written a book. We've heard this story somewhere before, I think. While you're not running for president, are you using the Barack Obama template, political template at all, to gain political success?
I have a one-year-old daughter. And again, my family came here and pretty much lived the American dream. But it wasn't without difficulty. And so I'm running for governor after watching our current governor pit one community against the next for the last 2 years. I saw the same model play out nationally. And we're all just fighting each other. We're calling things fake news, where one group is deplorables, the other group is a snowflake. We're calling each other names. We're Americans. We're Illinoisans. So when I see the governor calling Chicago schools prisons or pitting one group of communities against the next, that's immoral. So I term limited myself in Chicago because I believed it was important to set an expiration date for myself because it forces me to work that much harder and that much faster to get things done. And I'm running today. I know what the odds are. I know what people are going to say. But I'm not going to let this race turn into who has the most money or what their name recognition is based on what their family has done in the past. This race has to be about progressive values and presenting a vision that is counter to the governor's terrible vision.
You mentioned term limits, and you did it for yourself in your Chicago aldermanic situation. What about governor? Are you pledging to only serve a certain number of terms as governor?
If I'm elected, I pledge to serve only 2 terms, and I believe we need to have legislation, an amendment passed, where we limit the chief executive to 2 terms only. I also believe we need to have legislative term limits. But I also recognize that term limits for rank-and-file legislators is not a panacea. It's an issue that is worthy of debate. The question that voters need to grapple with, do you want more powerful local elected officials or do you want powerful bureaucrats? It's just a transfer of power. So it's an issue worth debating. And I certainly believe we need to have limits on the executive and legislative leaders. But I think there's also sometimes value in having experience as rank and file legislators.
What about the way the maps are drawn in Illinois? You know, Governor Rauner has long been a proponent of changing that system. What do you think about it?
So here's what I'd ask Governor Rauner. You want electoral reform? You don't want partisanship? Why are you against automatic voter registration? Is it because you want to stop people like me from voting, who look like me from voting? So I'll commit to this. I believe we need to have redistricting reform. I'm all for it, just so long it's not the expense of minority communities. If Governor Rauner will commit to automatic voter registration, what is he scared of? You know, like the president said, outgoing president, Obama said, we're the only civilized country on the planet that makes it harder to vote, not easier.
Illinois had about a decade of Democratic majorities in all areas of the executive and legislative branches. The Democrats were in control from roughly 2002, mm-hmm. well into this decade. Yet there was anything but political euphoria in the Democratic Party. Why do you think that was?
Look, I think this is a Democratic and Republican issue where we don't go and tell voters about what it costs and what it means to run an effective government. We did this in Chicago too. 40 years of telling people we need to do more with less, we need to privatize public services, we sold off the parking meters to paper over deficits. Why? Because people like me didn't have the guts to go to voters and say, you know, we need to raise taxes or fees incrementally so we can pay for all the things you enjoy. No, we just papered everything over, sold everything off, told everyone we need to do more with less. And eventually we did that less with less. And then we had to raise taxes. That's dishonest. So if you want to talk about fraud, corruption, and waste, the narrative is a fraud, corruption, and waste. It's the same thing with state government. If we just did things incrementally and just leveled with voters instead of being fearful of commercials and ads and what some political operative is going to say and just leveled with people, we wouldn't be in this mess.
What about getting along with Speaker Madigan? He's certainly very powerful, not only in the Democratic Party, but also in the Illinois General Assembly and major decisions that are made that affect the state. How do you envision getting along and playing well politically with Mike Madigan?
And I met him once. So that's the extent of the relationship, was a meeting out of courtesy after I won my first race in 2011. Here's what I believe. I don't think you should demonize Speaker Madigan, Leader Redonio, Durkin, or Cullerton. They're people who happen to have a D or an R in front of their names because they need to be a part of a party. They're just people who want to make the state a better place to live. And as your job as a chief executive is to be able to find compromise, common ground, and not turn your opposition into cartoon characters, but figure out a way to work together. I mean, I think of President Reagan and Tip O'Neill. They didn't like each other. They would battle each other all day, hammer each other in the press. And occasionally, after the day was over, they'd go have a drink, smoke a cigar, have a meal, iron out a deal, announce it, and then go back to hammering each other again. That's democracy. That's how it's supposed to work. Partisanship and rancor is good, but it just shouldn't replace rational public discourse. And with Governor Rauner, it's all politics all the time and zero governing.
There's some big bucks involved in this race, precedent setting, you could say. Chris Kennedy has about the best name recognition you could have. And there are rumors that J.B. Pritzker is considering a bid, and he's worth billions, some say even surpassing current Governor Rauner's private worth. Mm-hmm. How do you manage to compete against a field like that?
I'm a normal person like 99.9% of the state. I'm not a millionaire. I'm not a billionaire. I'm not a millionaire. I'm not even a 100,000-aire. Just a normal person who cares about our society, who cares about our state. And I would like to think that, you know, this next generation of young people has the same opportunities I did, because it's getting harder with every passing generation. And that's not okay. And so, and all the while, we allow the rich to get richer. What I'm tired of is this idea that it's okay to call into question the salaries of a working person, a janitor or electrician or a lawyer, and say, well, I can't believe they make so much money. And that's somehow an American virtue we accept as part of a capitalistic society. But if you call into question the salaries of Bruce Rauner or one of the other billionaires, somehow you're some communist. All I'm saying is we need to be cognizant of the fact that our country, after the Depression, didn't experience these major shocks and stock market crashes and huge waves of inequality when we had people and government working together to ensure a balance between big business and people. That's all. When we let go of that, starting with Nixon, is when we started this downward slide to driving down wages and gutting unions. And that's what's gotten us to a point where we just elect rich people. We have to stop worshiping wealth.
What's your reaction to Peoria area Congressman Sherry Bustos not getting into the governor's race?
Look, she's obviously a strong leader in Congress as a part of a strong Democratic delegation that we send. I think she would have been a formidable opponent had she jumped in the race. I have a tremendous amount of respect for her, but I also respect her decision not to jump in and work on behalf of Illinoisans in Congress. So I think this primary process is going to be interesting. It's good to have lots of people and lots of voices. Ultimately, what I think is going to win is vision.